good afternoon, and welcome to The Working Week on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And if you listen to our election night coverage, you will have gotten that in-joke. But this is Open Sources Guelph, and I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz from the Crooked Beat? No. Yeah, I get a little bit punchy there on Tuesday, and you know, rightly so, considering, but well, we're going to talk about it shortly, but yeah, I've recovered somewhat, so I think we'll see how the show goes.
We'll see how it goes.
We'll recover by the time our guest gets here.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today we will be talking to Ward 6 Councillor Carl Wettstein, who's taking time out of the very busy schedule during the height of budget season right now at City Hall. He's going to come talk to us about budget things, obviously, but also about what's been going on with Guelph Municipal Holdings, Inc., the Dublin Street Seniors Residence Development, and the comings and goings of city staff, and we will have your questions, too. And then finally, or first of all, I should say...
but finally as well.
That was a Freudian slip.
Secretly...
What do you know? I mean, this time last week, I think we scoffed at the possibility that Donald Trump would be right now president-elect of the United States. But if you listen to our election night special, you know how that turned out. And I just want to give credit where credit is due for that effort. First of all, the entire election night, lining up the guests, getting the panel with Rockside and Christopher in here, that was all a Scotty Hertz joint.
I had nothing
to do with that except for doing the social media promo and the post on the website. But
you were also a guest, too. So
I was a guest, but organizing that was all on Scotty, and I just wanted to say kudos.
Well, thank you. I'm glad it went okay, and we would appreciate any feedback on that, too, good, bad, or otherwise. We don't mind, so if you want to send that along, be like... Even if it's what election broadcast, then you know, then we failed. But anyway, yes. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. So we try here. We really do.
Well, it would be nice.
10 years in the. We were just talking earlier. Yeah. 10 years in the election radio business here on CFRU Election 06.
Mm-hmm.
That's something. When I did the sniff too, getting ready for the next topic.
Well, I was going to say
sniff's the least of the worries.
It would have been nice if left-leaning people and progressives in the United States had tried a little harder, because Donald Trump, he did the impossible and got elected president of the United States, 45th president of the United States. He was meeting with Barack Obama today at the White House, where he will soon
Did
live.
You see any of that? I missed it completely. I was working, so I couldn't.
They had a nice little statement. It wasn't too press heavy. I mean, they did what they did, but they had a closed door meeting for an hour. Then they have the press in for, you know, to take pictures and make statements, and then the press will quickly shoot out. That was that. And they had Trump called it an excellent discussion. They could have talked longer, even. What I found interesting, though, was this is apparently the first time they've ever, like, met each other. Like, they've been in, like, each other's room,
right?
Yeah, because they were in the 2011 press corps dinner. They were in the same room. That was, of course, the famous one where Obama did the bit about his long-form birth certificate with Trump sitting right there. But yeah, they had never met, been introduced to each other before.
I'm sure it was fine.
You
Let me get
so?
Some coffee, Donald. Thanks very much. Yeah. we could reenact the whole thing that never happened.
So. I can't imagine what that must be like for him.
Yeah, it must have to hold it in. Both of them, I guess, to some degree. Right?
Well, I mean...
There must be other people present too, to act sort of as a moderating presence, even if it's just...
I think they were meeting alone, actually.
The butler or something. What the butler saw.
There were no staffers. And as that was going on, Melania Trump was meeting with Michelle Obama, and Mike Pence was meeting with Joe Biden. So it was
the transfer begins. Preliminary stuff, right? Nothing official yet.
Yeah,
but
yes,
the wheels there are in motion. And like you said, thank God. I guess it's finally, but it's also we've only just begun. Pretty incredible. I only had one person in my feeds, both expert and non, we're talking Facebook, Twitter, blah, 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 who said Trump's going to win. And he was adamant about it. Mm. He's an author named John Jeter out of the U.S. He wrote a great book called Flat Broke in the Free Market. And he used to work for the Washington Post, spent a lot of time analyzing.
So he knows about being flat broke.
He knows about being flat broke because he's a writer and works and a journalist. Yeah, the journalists are going to have to watch their backs as well. But he knows a lot about this, let's call them the slice of people. I'm not going to say white, whatever, this and that. The slice of people that elected Trump's a big slice, right? 60-odd million. And he said, just watch. He said, you watch. And everybody's like, no, no way, you're wrong. And then he said, I don't want to call myself Nostradamus, but he was the I told you so guy. So because no one, even Malcolm Gladwell was on CBC doing his usual talky thing. And he's like, he was like, oh, there's no way Trump will win. Mm-hmm. So everyone was adamant the guy's not going to win except for Trump and, you know, the other millions that voted for him. Sure enough, look what happened. Although now the focus seems to be on, well, Hillary got more of the popular vote. And does that sound familiar? Because the same thing happened in 2000 with Gore. The gap was smaller, though, wasn't it?
Yes.
I just keep seeing
this. Well, it came down to one. Well,
Hillary had more votes. Keep hearing it over and over.
It is right now, it's like something like 200,000, a quarter of a million votes.
Still.
But I mean, that was the whole thing in 2000 came down to that one state, which was Florida, as people remember.
Yeah.
First of all, one of the interesting things was that Trump, and people have been famously pointing this out, in 2012 said, the Electoral College is a complete disaster. Worked out in his favor this time. I haven't heard a lot of disaster talk about the Electoral College this year. The weird thing is, breaking down the numbers, what happened was Republicans came home. They all, held their nose and voted Trump or made peace with it or reconciled it from the perspective of, like, oh, at least we'll have a conservative government in Washington. And then that along with all the people from the other end with, like, let's blow up the system by sending a Washington, complete and utter Washington outsider. On the Hillary side, the Obama coalition didn't show up.
Yes. She's
down 5 million voters as compared to Obama in, I think it's in 2012, that number. So she didn't turn out the coalition. He was able to keep the coalition that McCain had and that Romney had. And if you look at like how it's laid out on a bar graph side by side, the Republican vote hasn't changed that much. He didn't bring in millions of new voters. He was able to keep the coalition together in spite of himself, if we're to believe some of the things that have been said by some Republican politicians. He was able to keep it together, and everyone sort of abandoned ship on Hillary, perhaps. I mean, it was for various reasons, because they didn't like her personally. They didn't like the email thing. They didn't like... she's too cozy with conformity and the banks and Washington, blah, 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 whatever the reason. They didn't roll up for Hillary the way they rolled up for Obama. And that gave Trump enough of an in to get in.
Yeah, and this, we mentioned it on Tuesday as well, in that it was just sort of not quite a no-show, but it was it is that kind of thing where you can't blame any one factor. There's something else that is surfaced too. It's like, well, you know, if they'd have run, Bernie would have won. You can't really say that. But the first report that I read after leaving the station was, I think it was off the CBC, and it was somebody who was, and this is, I don't know if this was a trend, somebody has measured it somewhere, who started off supporting Bernie and then he switched to Trump. And I think this is a big part of it, the sort of swing voters, the people that really have no dedicated who they were going to vote for, and they end up voting for the Libertarian or the Green, or switching parties that wouldn't be imaginable here, really, jumping from the Democrat zone to the Republican zone, is that the people, I think the main thing was that they wanted an outlier. They wanted somebody who, on the fringe, and this is what's almost hilarious about it to a degree, is the whole, we don't want somebody... The words I keep hearing are elite and establishment. Now, if there's anybody, at least in the business world, who is definitely elite and clearly an establishment business person because he's worth a billion, maybe more, it's Donald Trump. Right. So, I mean,
his brand is elite.
Yes.
If you look at like his hotels, even
it's all shiny. Yeah. It's all
and
lots of money. And yeah.
If you go to the website for the Toronto one, which, you know,
it tanked though, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. They're looking to offload it. Trump himself doesn't own the Toronto Hotel. It's one of those ones like Trump and name only.
Branding.
It's a Tino. But his management company does manage it. But if you go to the Trump Hotel website, it's like, we have opulent this and extravagant that, and we're going to, you know, it's a class act, this kind of thing. And, you know, everything is...
It's a class act. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
It's like Scrooge McDuck living is what they're selling you. But yeah, that's kind of the weird part of all this is that he the blue collar billionaire thing.
Yeah.
Even though there's really no, so I don't care that he eats McDonald's. I mean, to me, the whole point of being rich is that you never have to eat McDonald's again. But that's what he does, and you're free to eat what you want. Okay,
yeah.
Fine. But for all the talk about Trump pals around with the construction guys, he still cheats the construction guys.
Yes.
Those are the same guys who months later he doesn't pay.
And works on his locker room talk, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, and oh, yeah, this is what we were talking about on Tuesday, was that anybody who pulled that kind of stuff in Canada would be done. You'd have been done. If Trudeau, you name it. Anybody had pulled half of the stunts that he did, and I don't want to diminish it by saying stunts, but all the business coming out about assaulting women, racist, sexist, xenophobia, you name it.
Look at all the people who fell during the federal election, like the girl in Alberta who...
was on the record cover.
Yeah, like Smack Talk.
Yeah.
And
you're done.
And the guy who peed in the cup and washed it out.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think that's like the Canadian equivalent of, you know.
And that's one incident.
Yeah. That's
but then, of course, we have the Canadian equivalent in Kelly Leach, who seems to want to ride the wave a bit. We're going to show those elites. We're going to show those elite people because this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. And I'm like, are you mad? Like, are you quite literally mad?
I don't know if she's mad or she's
opportunistic. In the old sense of the word. Are you mad? Because I didn't want to say nutso, but I guess I will for context. But you know what I mean. Are you off your rocker, as they used to say? As Trump would say, there's something going on there. There's something going on there. Because I think she says these things, and everybody, you know, that was this week in Saskatchewan, and everybody's sort of like, what? What is she talking about? So she seems to think this is going to be riding the wild surf to the top somehow, and it'll be interesting to see where she ends up.
And I mentioned this on the post-election piece I wrote for our website. Canadians cannot be smug about this, because looking at the United States, at politics in the United States, is looking 4 or 5 years into our future.
Mm-hmm.
So for Kelly, I mean, I'm surprised Kelly Leach or anybody like managed to latch on that quickly, but I guess you got to strike while the fire is hot. She sent out a press release, or not a press release, but like an emailer to supporters like 4 hours after Trump was declared the victor, saying, yeah, there you go, showing the elites. And then last night she said, and I wrote this quote down, that they will not be bullied by those with politically correct vision. So, of the country, basically, because she's, I guess, because of her stance about the Canadian values thing, she thinks the politically correct are bullying her.
Mm.
But yeah, you Canadians who are posting on Wednesday morning are like, good to be Canadian this morning. No, don't get complacent about this.
Exactly.
Two words, Rob Ford, and I posted this in the piece too. I posted this in the piece. Don't compare Trump to Rob Ford, because at least Rob Ford did the background work in terms of sitting in council for 10 years before running for mayor. Even if it was just by osmosis, he learned enough about government to know what the limitations and the abilities of his office would be. But his supporters were the same as the Trump supporters, mm-hmm. in that there was literally nothing he could do to turn them off. And 300,000,
mm-hmm.
that was the difference between John Tory. Maybe not 300,000. That seems like a lot. Maybe it was 3,000.
Yeah.
3,000 was the difference between Doug Ford, who was just riding his brother's coattails, and John Tory. 3,000. You can't tell me you can't see the connection here. So before you go on Facebook and post like how Canada's awesome because we wouldn't elect Trump, of course not. It can happen here.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Kelly Leach is already teeing it up.
Yeah, and I think the difference with Rob Ford, even though very similar, is that he was a bit of the inverse, and that he did, you know, he was always a right winger and did his time, but then he went more, as he kept started to derail a little more what we would consider Trump-like. And then the comments came out and all those things that we see you know, unabashedly in Trump all of the time.
He was kind of an introvert too, Rob Ford.
Yeah. Yeah, and he didn't like to socialize, and there's that picture of him at Pride Day where he's kind of standing off to the side.
Yeah.
But then, of course, when he had his moment at the mic, it was the usual, you know, right-wing rhetoric. And
something would come out like, these people work like dogs.
Yeah. And it was interesting. I can't remember Don Cherry's exact comment. I was like, oh, Don Cherry's chiming in on Trump. I was like, yeah, those lefties, go back to where you came from. Don't let anybody into the country. And speaking of that sort of tone, which is sort of ha-ha coming from Don Cherry, I also wondered how long it would take until the blatant, outright racist stuff would start, not just on social media, but the painting of the buildings, and it took 0 seconds. And one of the first things I saw, I follow the Buffalo news, and there was a couple of incidents in Buffalo, our neighbors, good neighbors, Canisius College. There was a lynched doll hanging in the elevator of Canisius. I actually know a couple of people who had gone there in the past from Toronto. And then, of course, I found another tweet that sort of was annotating everything that had happened. And it's almost limitless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it didn't take long. And that's also shadows. I keep saying this is another, obviously it's not as catastrophic as 9/11, but I knew the echo was going to be the same in terms of all the things that Trump said about the Muslims and the Mexicans. I guess that makes us the snow Mexicans. I don't know. It hasn't been much about Canada yet, but sorry, is that right? I don't even know if that's racist, but I saw it more than once in sort of a Canadian ha-ha way. It's like, oh, leave the snow Mexicans alone.
Maybe we're White Walkers, if we want to use the Game of Thrones analogy.
That sounds a bit more cool than snow Mexican. Nothing against Mexico either, but it's, you know, they're the ones with the crosshairs on them right now.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know. When he's done with them, does he move on to us? And, you know, does he buy Nova Scotia and turn it into a golf course? I don't know. But thankfully, it has been a bit quiet on the Canadian front. And it's interesting, too, hearing the Liberals and Justin Trudeau and those in power, they're really holding the cards close and not outright. You know, some of the other parties have been like, oh, my God, we got to deal with this guy. But Trudeau was handling it very liberal style.
Yeah. And Mulcair was a couple of weeks ago saying, Trudeau's got to come out against Trump. And it's like,
he can't. You can't.
This is where Trudeau is either incredibly lucky or more shrewd than we give him credit for. And I've always kind of leaned more towards the shrewd, if only because of the track record, because I don't think anyone is this lucky in politics. Yeah, he played it close. I mean, yeah, he said some stuff last Christmas. But I think that was like after the afterglow of his own victory and perhaps where the future was going to go in the United States. Mm-hmm. But he, after that, all this year, when Trump started winning, he sort of kept it cool. He's like, yeah, I can't, you know, I'm not going to comment about a foreign country's election process. And it was right. It was the correct call because, yeah. Love Trump or hate Trump, you got to work with Trump.
And even Hillary Clinton in the concession speech, she's like, we got to, even for everything that went down, she's still like, we have to give this guy a chance. And they have to because he won. Like, that's the hands down, it wasn't as if it was, I mean, it was obviously the popular vote is one thing, but seeing those numbers and on Tuesday when it became clear that everybody was like, oh, he's actually going to win. It wasn't a resounding win, but, you know, he got the number. What was it, 279?
Yeah.
It'd probably be more once the last few.
The Electoral College?
Yeah.
He's over 300 now.
It is, eh?
Yeah.
Still working on the old numbers. But anyway,
There's a couple of states that are still
pretty solid. That's not 271, right?
No.
You know, it's him.
He doesn't have a mandate. I heard Kellyanne Conway use the word mandate, and it's like when you don't get the popular vote, but it's not really a mandate.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I mean he needs to. I mean, this, in spite of everything, in spite of the laundry list, the 2-page New York Times centerfold of all the things, all the horrible things he said. Yeah, he has to be given the chance now. And one of the things I've noticed in his sort of public appearances the last couple of days is how muted he's been. He doesn't have that gusto or that bravado. And either he has realized that he is going to be president of the United States now, and that comes with it a certain amount of self-control, which I don't necessarily buy. Or he is in some sort of state of shell shock that, holy F, I have to do this now.
Yeah, and I think the best that America and the rest of us can hope for is that now that he's got the job or almost has the job, that he does decide to play the role.
Yeah.
Because to me, so far what we've seen has been a role-playing thing, really.
Yes.
Like, and, you know, they always make the comparisons to reality shows with Trump. It's like, oh, he's playing it as if it's a reality show. He likes to get a rise out of people. He says things, they react. Typical, like, you know, dude at a party wanting to impress people.
Yeah.
So if he really wants to impress now, and I you know, I'm not saying I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because I think people know where my politics lie. But I'm just hoping for America and for the free world, for God's sake, that he embraces it somehow,
right,
and that he has good guidance. But
right.
By the list, I take it you saw the list of people, including Sarah
yes.
Palin, that he's going to
yes.
have on the team. It's just like, Giuliani's back. It's like, oh my
well,
God.
Well, it's all the sycophants. It's,
yeah. But you have to hope that the other people that we don't hear about.
Well, there's more Kelly. Ones. There's more Kellyanne Conways and Corey Lewandowski's out there on his team. You have to hope.
That's
because
Corey really
Lewandowski
painful.
Was like the epitome of sore winner on Tuesday night on CNN.
Oh.
I'm not so much ready to subscribe to the apocalyptic vision some people on the left want us to believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is going to end one of three ways. Either it's going to be fine. He's going to be a center-right populist president and all the worst-case scenarios, and maybe there'll be some hiccups along the way, but maybe he'll do okay. Option two is all the worst, sort of like he's going to come down hard on the press. He's going to force build the wall. He's going to appoint radical right-wing judges, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And people are going to get so sick of the agenda that he's going to get thrown out in 2020. And then the third option is, despite everything, he's going to be a complete and utter managerial disaster as mm-hmm. president, where he won't be able to get anything done. It's going to descend into more rancor or more partisanship, even amongst his own party, at which point the logjam will go back and build up again, and he won't be able to deliver on his promises, and then he'll get thrown out anyway.
Yeah, because that'll be the key. Do the Republicans, who now control everything, once again, I think
right.
it's been since Bush Jr.'s first term was the last time I think they controlled the House, the Senate, and
yes.
the presidency. Is that right? I think so.
The Republicans took back the Senate in 2002,
yeah.
and then they
so
kept it until 2006.
Within that range, that was when they had control.
Right.
Now, if they decide to turn on him, that's when it's going to get not so good, I guess, for Trump and probably for the rest of us.
Right.
And, you know, there have been the nightmare scenarios floated where it's... I mean, he did promise the people in the Rust Belt that he was going to open the coal mines again.
Yeah.
He seems to be calling it clean coal, but as we know...
There's no such thing.
Obama called it clean coal, too. Do they rip up the trade agreements and take all the jobs back? Do these agreements have just settled with Ford and then Ontario? Are they going to mean nothing?
Right.
Are the Mexican production going to go back there? Is it even feasible? Are we going to see all of these pipelines slapped up and the people that are protesting them just cleared out of the way, which thankfully didn't happen with the protests that were happening yet. I mean, there seemed to be a lot of protests yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody out in New York, not everybody, but New York. I mean, you name the cities, any major center in America had people out.
Yeah, when
Texas,
there's so many
Portland,
people
Chicago.
On the streets of New York that the
yeah.
streets are shut down. That's
mm-hmm.
a real protest.
That's significant.
I think what I'll add to what you're saying is, I lost my train of thought. No, but I'll point out a couple of things. First of all, that it wasn't entirely bad news for those who like diversity and progressive politics. Joe Arpaio, the sheriff in Arizona, who is like completely blatantly racist,
mm-hmm.
and once sent a cold case squad to Hawaii to get to the bottom of Obama's birth certificate.
Oh.
He is out of office. He's no longer sheriff of his county in Arizona. The first Somali American lawmaker was elected, I think, in Michigan or Minnesota.
Do they happen to be Muslim as well?
She would have to. She was born in Kenya, or she started life in a refugee camp, maybe. I can't remember her name, unfortunately. Kamala Harris, the first Indian American. I think she's of mixed race ancestry because she's Indian American plus African American. So she is a twofer. She's the first Californian woman of African American descent to be elected senator. Former congresswoman, now Senator Tammy Duckworth, who, of course, faced off against the incumbent in Illinois, Republican senator who, you know, was blatantly racist to her at a debate because I think it's her father's family goes back to the American Revolution, and she mentioned that every generation of her family had served in uniform, including her herself. And he's like, oh, your family came from Thailand to serve under Washington, huh?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so that guy's gone. Tammy Duckworth is in. California, Nevada, and Massachusetts approved recreational pot.
Mm-hmm.
Florida, Arkansas, North Dakota, hardly blue states themselves, approved medical pot. California put restrictions on ammo purchases. You now have to have a background check when you buy ammunition
mm-hmm.
in large quantities. And Colorado, Arizona, Maine, and Washington State passed a minimum wage increase of $13.50 an hour, which, if you are keeping score, is about $1.50 more than Ontario right
now.
That
is all amazingly progressive stuff. And, of course, it's been trounced by everything that's happened. I think they're going to need the medical marijuana and the recreational marijuana. But I'm wondering, and that maybe you don't know, I'm just going to put this out there, is that ammo order something that could be... It probably could be challenged constitutionally.
It could probably be. Yeah, I would not be surprised.
And
if
it sounds like the kind of
challenged.
Thing that if Trump wants to start using the executive orders, executive powers, because by the sounds of it, it sounds like anything executive order that Obama came up with is just going to be squashed. He's just going to go gone.
Yeah.
And he's able to do that because that's how that office works. And if he's going to come up with some wacky ones, or not wacky ones, but that go against what the wishes of the people, which should be respected. Maybe that will be one of them. We'll see. I mean, it's not a minor thing. I think it's a very good thing in California. But if it's, you know, if the NRA people get their backs up or the KKK or whoever else has supported Donald Trump, it may be problematic.
The thing with executive orders, there are things that he can do with executive order and things that he can do under his own power as president, like not ratify Paris. He could put the Paris Climate Change Agreement in the shredder, and then that's that.
Mm-hmm.
He can withdraw the TPP from congressional, because it still needs to be passed by Congress, but he can just withdraw it. He can change, he can do stuff about deportations through executive action. He can...
Which sounds like it's going to happen.
But he can't, like, repeal NAFTA using executive action. That has to actually go through Congress. That actually has to go through a process. So, I mean, there's stuff he can do with executive action, but...
And I take our liberals are probably
limitless.
Happy that they worked on those other trade agreements so hard because it may, you know, if NAFTA does get trashed or at least reopened, it may mean... trouble for places like Guelph, who are very reliant on the auto industry that nobody wants to admit to. But we are.
I remembered my point, and it's a final thought. And it's the same thing I said after Brexit, which is what happens if Trump does all the things he says and the jobs don't come back? And this is the point I made with Brexit. What happens when UK leaves the European Union and things don't get quote-unquote better, meeting the definition of the way those people voted
in terms of get smaller,
getting things better? And I do wonder that about Trump Nation, too, whether when things don't automatically get better, quote-unquote, wherein will lie the fault if Trump follows up on all his promises. So we'll have to leave that there. Food for thought as we go into the Trump era. And we will come right back with the Wettstein era of our open sources program. We know Carl is in the hall when he come in. So
Carl's in the house.
So we will go to commercials and music, and then we'll come right back with Ward 6 Counselor Carl Wettstein. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
Every day. Hey, you know something, people? I'm not black, but there's a whole lot of times I wish I could say I'm not white. Well, I'll see the fires burning and the local people...
Ah, we could let Frank Zappa go on for another 10 minutes about what was going on in America in 1967, but we won't. That's because it's 2016. Ha! That was Frank Zappa from Kill Ugly Radio Some More. I think the original album was called... I don't remember the original album was called... Oh, Freak Out. And that was... surprise. And that
apropos.
Song was called Trouble Every Day, something from The Vault. So Trouble Every Day, we'll see. But not here.
Well, our guest today knows about Trouble Every Day because he's a city councilor. Carl Wettstein is the second councilor from Ward 6 we've had in, second of two. We had Mark McKinnon in earlier this summer. So we appreciate Carl making a set, and thank you for joining us today, Carl.
Glad to be here. And let Mark go first. He's the rookie.
That's how it's done. You know, actually, it is a good point because we've been sort of conscientious in trying to get on. Well, we've been conscientious in trying to get on all the city councilors, but we've also been conscientious of like the people who are new, people we don't typically hear from, and
chief of police.
Yeah, chief of police, and so. But it's great to have you here now, and especially since you've kind of been making news yourself lately. Perhaps inadvertently, but I think you know what I'm referring to. But the shareholders meeting a couple of weeks ago with the Guelph Municipal Holdings, I do wonder, and perhaps you can lend your perspective on it. I do wonder, in terms of some of the talk going around the council, if there was maybe some confusion of the issue, because there are a couple of different things going on. There was the GHMI, and there's district energy, and I wonder if. Perhaps from your perspective as someone who's been very high on the GMHI, if the two issues have been confused and whether the baby was thrown out with the bathwater.
Definitely confused. I think there's been a, even amongst councillors, mm-hmm. I think we've had a difficult time clearly identifying that district energy is not GMHI, mm-hmm. and GMHI, more importantly, is not district energy.
Right.
And that's where we had that little... free-for-all, if you want to call it that, where two or three of us, three councillors and the mayor, stepped out of the box, and we may have also said some things we shouldn't have. But I think it was important because there needs to be a clear understanding that, from my perspective, I was trying to make the point that GMHI was created to look after optimization of assets, mm-hmm. not energy.
Right.
And it's when when the district energy fell under its umbrella in midstream, and it became the focus of GMHI when it wasn't even the mandate of GMHI, that we went through a year of confusion.
Right.
And part of the battle that Cam and I had, disagreement, was that we're the two reps on the board. And the point I made was district energy hijacked GMHI.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I were both there. We can claim some responsibility and some influence, but it had nothing to do with district energy and the loss of the $14 million.
Right.
That's not what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking strictly about the fact of what happened to GMHI. And we put it on the shelf. That does not mean that it's dead.
Right.
I supported that. And I supported that because right now, until we clean up the energy part of the portfolio, it can't do its job. It's mm-hmm. too hard to understand the complexity of the relationship. The public is confused. And even going out and getting board members to apply would not be timely. In fact, we probably wouldn't get the quality of board members. And we had a great board.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we had to unwind it, but it was a great board. And I'm a little disappointed that we're going to have to delay that a year or two before we can get it going again.
And I don't blame people for getting confused because I do think, you know, sitting there in the meetings, you know, I get confused and I'm trying to follow along with this. But when GMHI was created, it wasn't for energy. It was for like assets, like things that the city owned that could all be managed under one umbrella as opposed to having it separated across departments.
I need to tighten that up a little bit. Not
tighten
all
it up
assets.
For me. Yeah.
the fundamental starting point really was more around a holding company that is called under the Provincial Act, referred to as DevCo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where some municipalities get approval from the province to create a development corporation. and they separated a bit from the political arena. You get out where you can work with partnerships, you can make deals, you can understand each other, and some of that stuff can't be public to the detail.
Right.
But in order to get that approved, you have to make it very, very clear that those assets have been moved away.
Right.
You have a clear shareholder agreement that tells you when and how the decision-making, any critical decision-making, is going to get reported back through the shareholder, which in this case is council. And we didn't kick that off until the fall of 2014 when we actually populated, and this is where the confusion partially came in, populated GMHI with its first two companies.
Mm-hmm.
So we put in two. Well, Gessie for sure,
right,
which is the hydro company, is very mature. Invita, which had the non-regulated district stuff, had only been around, say, 7, 8, 9 years. And that's it had district energy, it had the wires company, it had the dump and the energy we're getting off that. Those were all revenue producers. But we said, hey, these are two logical ones. We don't need two holding companies. Gessie had created another holding company called GHI.
Right.
And that's where all of the control and management and decision-making took place up until the fall of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
We then melded those we folded GHI into GMHI. And then we populated a new board starting January 1st of 2016 with five outside board members and only two inside.
Mm-hmm.
The transitional board, which was there from mostly 13 and 14, it was around a little bit in 10 and 11, was there simply to deal with creating the governance model,
mm-hmm,
for overseeing it. And that had five counselors on it. So you heard a couple of counselors say we had this politically controlled board. No, we had five politicians, including the mayor, working with a couple of external people to create a governance model.
Right.
Zero involvement in any decision-making to do with any corporation, whether it's GJR or Gessie or Invita. A lot of confusion about that. And we have to take some responsibility as a shareholder for not being clear on the lines of demarcation.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that helps a little bit.
Great.
I know it's a little long.
Yeah.
It's a long-winded one.
Makes sense. But it does sort of contribute. It's not something you can break down into sound bites, and that's kind of why these kind of discussions are important.
And you definitely can't answer an email or use email to answer that question to a constituent.
No,
right.
When
stop
it happens,
reading after the first. Yeah.
Well, I get on the phone.
TLDR.
If
yeah.
If somebody's interested, it, yeah, I say, you know, give me a call. I'll give you a call and have a half hour discussion.
So in an ideal world, what would the end product of GMHI look like?
GMHI would be very similar in terms of its design, the shareholder agreement, but you'd want to make sure that, for example, I'm going to have to digress, something like Gessie probably should never have gone under that. That was already a regulated provincial company that had to have a board. It didn't really fit under GMHI.
It was its own thing already.
It was its own thing. It had its own, and it had to be an independent board.
Right.
So going forward, if we retain Gessie, and we're looking at that right now in what form, I wouldn't foresee it going back under GMHI if GMHI was reconstituted. I would see things like perhaps the railway, perhaps a parking corporation, perhaps DevCo developing some sites like maybe a Baker Street, or some other lands that are out there. Assets that can be separated from just the day-to-day operation. You wouldn't, for
long-term
example, put
things.
Transit under there,
right,
or parks or streets and that kind of stuff.
Long-term things, like, because you mentioned Baker Street. That's something that's going to happen. I don't know. I don't think it's in the capital forecast to redevelopment as it stands right now. So that's even, like, maybe 15 years hence.
I hope not. We have been talking about getting an RFP out on that to get it developed for the better part of 15 years.
Right.
I do think we've pushed it down the road at least a couple more.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that if we handle this right, with or without GMHI,
mm-hmm,
we are hopeful, especially with all the development that's taken place in the downtown, to get that Baker Street model out there and to start asking partners to come in and give us some RFPs, I would hope within the next 2 to 3 years at the worst.
I'm just going to ask the layman question. What's an RFP?
Oh, sorry. Request for proposals.
Oh, okay. Good. Right.
And it's probably an ideal time because the furniture place in North Windham is closing. I can't remember the Royal City.
Right next to Baker.
Yeah.
Isn't it Royal City Furnishings or something?
I think so.
I didn't even realize it was still open.
They had the sign out. I walked past it today at this closing sale. So, I mean, where Ray's used to be is gone. It's now part of the parking lot.
Right.
And so this building, it almost seems like, I don't know, fate wants Guelph to start working on this.
Well, part of it is we identified, and Ray's was included. I don't know whether the other one you had identified is. 3 or 4 properties that over the last at least 3 or 4 years we've been working to acquire to complete the assembly of the Baker Street site. And that's part of it. That's part of the exercise.
Well, I think we segue here nicely into the budget, which is going on right now. You had the tax-supported presentation last night and the capital and non-tax-supported last week. And from your perspective, I know that the staff is aiming at 1.98 in terms of an increase this year. And I know that a lot of your colleagues on council were back in September saying this is going to be a pretty difficult budget process, but from the media desk, it seems like maybe the difficulty hasn't set in yet, but it seems like, and perhaps you can correct me, that the staff has brought council something that they can comfortably work with, because leaving aside the levy situation for a minute, but just the increase, I mean, there will always be people against the increase, but I mean, it's not the 3 point, I can't remember the number last year. This is,
I think it was about 3.02 or something like that.
But it's not an unreasonable place to start from in the eyes of a lot of people.
And I think that's a good way of characterizing the 1.98.
Mm-hmm.
That's not staff's recommendation for a budget.
Right.
That's staff's presentation after they've gone through their total review of their departments, you know, tightened them up a little bit in terms of expectations, told them to make sure they do the full job on the efficiency component, and have said, okay, the 1.98 will deliver essentially the services we delivered last year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if that's council's will, that's what that will cost. And they explained why, where they made a few changes. And I think we're saying, gee, that was, in fact, we did say, extremely well done.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, also said there are two other significant aspects to the budget. One is what we call expansions.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those aren't really expansions. And if you saw last night, I raised that question 3 or 4 times. And I've been doing that for about 20 years, by the way. I can't quite get a change, but maybe in the next 10. And not that it's necessarily a problem, but it's a little bit confusing when, because of growth, we have to add a bus.
Right.
That's not an expansion. If we didn't add the bus, we'd be cutting the service because that part of the city wouldn't be getting bus service.
Right.
So we've made that point back and forth. Some of those items on the 10 expansions that they identified are actually or would be service reductions in that area if those are not approved. So there's about 0.57%, I think, was the number of those 10 expansions. And those are the ones that staff are saying, we need that to maintain our service levels. We need that to meet our commitments. And we need those to deal with our strategic plan as it is laid out. We have, however, now the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Are we prepared to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect we'll go through all 10 of them in some form on December the 7th. I suspect some will survive and others won't. So some number between 1.98 and 2.55 is going to be in the cards. And the third component is a critical component because it is the place we need financing the most.
Okay.
And that's in the infrastructure gap.
Yeah.
Staff have very conservatively said we would need about 2% a year for the next 10 years, those rough numbers, to close the gap entirely.
Right.
That's not real. No council is prepared to do that. So they've come in very conservatively and said, let's start with 0.5% and let council chew on it. And let's see if you're prepared to actually pardon the pun, take a bite out of that infrastructure, infrastructure gap. So I suspect that those three items will add up to something on December the 7th.
And the Association for Municipalities of Ontario has sent a series of resolutions around. It's coming up at the planning meeting this Monday,
right,
about addressing that the gap. I mean, it is billions of dollars when you add it up, right, across the province. I do wonder, because just the general feeling is there isn't much of an appetite even for a 0.5% levy. I guess maybe it's a visceral thing. People just like to say, we pay our taxes every year. Now you're asking for, I mean, it comes down to, the staff said $5 a month per
$5 per 100,000 of the value of your home.
That's right.
Right. So if your home is worth $200,000, it's $10.
Yeah. Right. But still, I mean, there is not much appetite for that. And I wonder, are we looking at this wrong? Are we, because municipalities only have so many revenue creating tools, which are property taxes and levies and user fees.
Right.
Shouldn't we perhaps be dedicating our time to appealing to the higher levels of government, the ones who, downloaded additional services for years to balance their own books?
Right.
Rather than, trying to ask people to dig deeper in their own pocket to close a problem that was maybe created by those higher levels of government in some small way.
Absolutely. And we have been talking to the provincial government and the feds, for that matter, because some of the stuff probably more appropriately is a federal one. I think affordable housing, for example,
mm-hmm.
is a federal responsibility, whereas transit is a provincial responsibility. So there's no question. And there's the large mayor's conference that CAM's on. They've been talking about that all year and have been meeting with the province. That's a slow process.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, very hesitant about giving municipalities income-producing options.
Right.
But they also recognize that a good part of why we have the gaps, and they don't like to admit it, but it's part of the downloading.
Right.
And so they share in it. Now, in fairness again, both the federal and the provincial governments since the last elections are starting to move money towards the municipalities. And we've been successful in getting some $20+ million in the various areas identified. So that's going to be helpful. But that's still a drop in the bucket. So at the end of the day, the infrastructure gap is ours. We are required under the Municipal Act to close it,
mm-hmm.
and not closing it, and I think I can speak on behalf of my ward partner. This is one of his number one priorities. He may have even mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is an appetite. There is no appetite in the city for any tax increase beyond a couple of percent.
Right.
There just isn't. So the choice to me is not whether or not we have a levy. Mm-hmm. I personally think we will have one and should have one. If that makes the tax increase too high, then we have to decide what services we're going to cut.
Mm-hmm.
We can't have both, but the decision isn't no levy. The decision, from my point of view, is, okay, the levy's required, taxes too high, we better sit around and talk about cutting some services. Which ones do you want to cut, council, and which ones would you like us to cut, taxpayers?
So you will vote in favor of the levy?
I probably will, yeah.
In terms of what you've heard back, because I know you had a town hall. I think all the councillors had a town hall.
We had one a year ago. Our tax one is on the 17th.
Yeah, okay. Yours is the one coming up. But
right.
I mean, I'll readjust my question and ask, in terms of feedback you are getting from your ward, the people you represent, what are they expecting from you in this budget season?
Some of the other ward councillors don't like it when Mark and I say this, but partially because of the market values in mm-hmm. Ward 6, our people are saying we pay the highest taxes in the city.
Right. Because it's new developments.
It's not so much the new development. It's based on the market value. So a house, say a 1,500 square foot house on an excise lot in Ward 6 might be $40,000 more than mm-hmm. that same house in another ward.
Right.
Not to pick on any particular ward. And so for the taxes on that house are higher. Services cost the same.
Right.
But you have to pay. We get reminded of that daily as councillors in Ward 6. So we get a lot of pressure to say, you may not be able to deal with that, but our taxes are going up disproportionately.
Mm.
Daily, I can imagine those emails. The cavalcade, probably. Right?
Well, the emails aren't daily, but we'll get a phone call. We'll walk into somebody in the grocery store. And, of course, this time of year, we do get something at least every day or so.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you ever go to the store in disguise?
No. Maybe I should.
Shades on.
Perhaps before we wrap up, because I know this isn't necessarily your ward, but it does tie into things like getting money from the government for new construction and things like development. The Dublin Street development, that does seem like I'm not sure how council is going to circle that square, if I can use that expression. That it just seems like the neighborhood is not very keen on it, perhaps on a practical perspective, having seniors having to climb hills to get home every day seems impractical. But the money is there. The government wants to give it to us. And is that so wrong, I think, is the maybe where the practicality and desire sort of clash, I wonder.
Yeah, the fact that it's in the affordable housing category and therefore is eligible for the federal grant, to some extent complicates the reality. The driver behind it is the actual zoning of the site.
Mm-hmm.
And the zoning of the site is up to four stories of some type of residential development. The neighborhood would be opposed to that for all the same reasons. So it really isn't a seniors issue or even affordability issue. It's whether that site can actually or should actually have a building on it. And if it is a building, it should be very low so it doesn't interfere with the school, it doesn't interfere with view lines to the church, etc. But the affordable housing doesn't drive that. What drives that is the availability of the money in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
In the long term, if Longfield pulls that money away, the owner will now have to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Do I simply build on that like I plan to, which is going to be a four-story building, or do I say, I may try to do something different?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we should confuse the affordability issue. And we seniors are pretty sensitive about being told we can't walk up hills.
I wasn't thinking of you.
I'm a senior, so I can speak on behalf of seniors.
So I just happen to, and I'm not sure whether you know the answer. I'm sure you do know the answer to this. The parking issue, I had read in the Trib about the developer said that they would make sure that certain people living there didn't have cars. You can't really do that, can you? Like, I didn't think you could legally say, okay, you can't have a car.
Right. It's a reverse Oprah. You can't have a car. You can't have a car.
It's like you can't say students can't live here and seniors can't live there. Like, you just can't do that legally. It's a human rights issue, right?
No, but what they can say, and it is part of official plans and design, they can say, I have 15 units and I have 10 spots.
Hmm.
These five units do not have a parking spot.
Right, so then it's just...
So if you want to buy the unit, you can. You have a car, you decide what you do with it.
But you can't check and say, okay, you have a car.
Absolutely no. You just, when I buy a unit with a spot I buy a unit without a spot.
And you park on Dublin somewhere on the street like I used to.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Many moons ago.
Like happens all over the city when they don't have quite enough parking for some of the buildings that are developed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Carl, we appreciate you coming by today, and we always like to leave the folks who listen a way to, if you could provide a way to people can get in touch with you if they want to send you those emails and concerns and thoughts.
Well, I definitely have our email. It's carl.wetstein@guelph.ca, and I'm also very, very comfortable. Anybody would like to chat and get a little more detail, give me a call.
He'll be at Zaire's at 7 o'clock.
That's right. My phone number is in the book, or send me an email. I'll send you the phone number.
Very good. And thank you so much again. And we appreciate your time and coming in and sitting with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And that is it for this week's edition of Open Sources Guelph. And just a reminder, Leanne Piper sits next to you on council, doesn't she?
Yes.
Yes. So your neighbor on city council, she will be here on December 8th. And then I will have the, well, we will have the official launch of the Ask Mayor Cam promotion, because he's going to be coming in December. And we will be officially launching the Send Us the Questions portion of that this coming week. So stay tuned for that. You can connect with the show at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And, of course, feel free to download this and other episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes. You can connect with me personally at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter or guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Twitter. I blog at a place called The Spanner Book. I'm also on Facebook. Just look up Scotty Hertz and be my friend. I need some friends, Noah.
I think,
will friend you if you look legit and you're from Guelph.
I think that's okay. A nice place to leave it on after some of the stuff earlier in the show.
Thank you for being a friend.
There you go.
Play the Golden Girls theme one of these days. I don't know.
Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources Guelph.